You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. And the bonus tag event is on right now. Receive $1,500 bonus cash towards the purchase of a new 2018 vehicle only at Lakewood Chev. Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. He'll be heading out to Dallas later tonight. I'll be joining him there tomorrow. Shogger, you had the details on Matt Benning, 1.9 AAV. Your thoughts on the two-year extension?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I think the numbers, in line with what he has the potential to bring. I think that I wouldn't say it's an overpayment. I think it's kind of right in that range. And I happen to be someone who believes in Matt Benning. And so I think that by the end of that contract, I think it'll look like it's pretty good value. So I think this is just fine for the Edmonton Oilers.
When you look at Matt Benning, where do you see the biggest growth?
I think that there is a, and I apologize, I'm at the airport, so if there's lots of noise going on in the background, that's why. I think there's a couple of areas for him to be more consistent. I think he has the ability to play a good game in his own end. I think he knows how. It's just a matter of being able to do it more consistently. So I think being able to lock things down a little bit more in his own zone, making better quick reads and quick plays under pressure. He's still very, very young into his NHL career, though he's an older player. He's still, he's not like a 20-year-old. Still very early on in his career, so I think there's room for improvement there. I also think that there's some untapped offense there. And I'm not saying that he's going to be the answer to the Oilers' issues on the blue line or on the power play, but I absolutely think Matt Benning could develop into an effective second power play unit defenseman, that he has that ability in his game and those instincts in his game and an underutilized shot. So I like this player, and I think that with time, he's going to be more valuable.
Young guy, not a lot of experience still, opportunities to grow, and you hope that Trent Yanni is a positive for him. I'm not sure him and Jim Johnson were ever necessarily on the same page. And I really felt the Oilers, who, when Andre Secker was out, had basically said they were going to use Matt Benning on the second power play and never really did.
Well, listen, Matt Benning got on the wrong side of his head coach early on in the season. And I was really vocal about it at the time when it happened. I thought Todd McClellan was too hard on Matt Benning early in the year. I thought Benning came out with the pressure of stepping in and filling a top four role. And I think he balked a little bit in the early couple of games. And if you recall, they had a stretch of games where, I mean, the whole team played terrible in sort of back-to-back games there. But they had that sort of hell week of practice where it was day after day of, pretty good skating, intense practices, an angry, pissed-off head coach. And it was pretty public. We were asking Todd McClellan questions about Matt Benning. And he was being pretty public about, criticizing his playing and saying he needs to be better. And then after 4 days between games and publicly criticizing him, he healthy scratched him the next game. And I think that was a crucial mistake. I think if you're going to criticize the player publicly, fine, give him a chance to earn it back. What you can't do is publicly criticize the player and then 4 days later healthy scratch him and not give him a chance to earn it back. I thought it was too heavy-handed. I thought it stripped Benning of some confidence in the early going last season. And I think he had a really hard time getting out from underneath that. Now, not Benning's job to be better, to rebound from whatever his head coach hands to him and be a professional and be better. But I think early in the season, he got some confidence stripped away. And as we know, Jason, young players' confidence is absolutely everything. I think he needed a little more of the carrot after getting the stick there.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, Mike Hoffman dealt twice in a short period of time. Pierre Dorion, I guess, didn't want to deal with the team in his own division. And this is not the first time we've seen this from Doug Wilson. You remember when L.A. and Boston traded Martin Jones, and then he scooped in and got Martin Jones back from Boston in that regard. And then similar thing here, just he's kind of more of the middleman, but basically shed $4 million in salary for Mikael Boedker in a sixth and a seventh to get a second and a fourth and a fifth.
Yeah, he's pretty sharp, isn't he? I liked it. He clears up some cap space, and he adds some draft picks, adds some maneuverability, and he can still go big game hunting a little bit if he wants to. So I like the trade. I think it works for him. I don't really understand Dorion's logic to not deal with teams in his own division. I think that's silly. that's a lot of teams that you're just not going to talk to. Sometimes good trades get made within a division. So I think that's, I don't know, maybe a general manager with not a ton of experience at the helm overthinking it a little bit, if that's actually the case. That seems odd to me. But, you know, and for the Florida Panthers, they're getting a player that you can bank on 22 to 29 goals pretty much every single year. But what's the situation going to be this year? What's the situation in his personal life? What's the situation in his relationship? What's the situation, you know, the way he's viewed by other players and teammates and even new teammates? And whatever he endures, how much is that going to affect his performance next season? Those are all fair questions. But the Panthers, who, as we know, give up a lot offensively with some real bad moves heading into the expansion draft, are taking a chance on replacing some of that offense at a reasonable price.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what happens with the Mike Hoffman situation. Obviously, Florida, maybe they did the due diligence on it, who knows. But if it comes out that that was truthful, the allegations from the Carlson family, I just have a hard time wondering how wives of other Florida players are going to feel.
Well, and it depends on the decisions that Mike Hoffman has to make. I mean, if it turns out to be true and everything is bang on and true and it, you know, it was her and, you know, whether he knew about it or not, whatever, and he decides to stand by her and to stick with her and shows up, you know, shows up at training camp with her in tow and at the family gatherings with her in tow, yeah, that'll be tough for sure. It's a small community and it's, you know, a tight-knit community. And so to all of a sudden show up as the new guy in that situation with that kind of baggage would be very, very difficult. And I don't know if or how that could possibly work. But, you know, if Mike Hoffman maybe wasn't aware of what was going on or if he, you know, ends up making a move in his personal life to start clean and shows up, you know, hat in his hand saying, yes, that was a bad situation. I've done what I can to fix it and I'm here to be a good teammate. Then, you know, hockey players can have short memories too. So there's a lot to this and we need to find out who actually did what before we even get too far down that path. But a lot of it will depend on how Mike Hoffman himself handles whatever the result of this is.
Shauger, when you look at the upcoming draft, and I will say this, one team that's always been involved was the San Jose Sharks, and I think they're going to be involved again. Whether they're trading up in the first round, what they've done numerous times, or they're trading their first round selection for other players, you know, I don't know if, like, I wrote an article today. Who do you think is the best GM in the NHL?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, Wilson has quietly been a super effective general manager for a long time, and his team has remained competitive. And, you know, granted, he's had some real cornerstone pieces that have been there for a long time, but he's done what he needs to do to stay competitive. I mean, a lot of teams struggle for years and never are able to, you know, find a goalie if they end up losing a real good goalie, and he addressed that need. He's been real solid. I think one of the other ones, maybe not a sleeper pick, but if you look at the difficult situations that he's had to deal with and the way he's been able to maneuver around them, excuse me, and come out on top, frankly, is Steve Yzerman. I think he's had some real tough situations handed to him in Tampa Bay, and I think he's shrewd and patient and smart, and I think he's come out on the right side of some real tough spots. So I think those two have got to be right up there among the best. Who was on your list?
I actually came out with Doug Wilson, and I wrote because of A, well, and I know people right away, they're going to say, well, he didn't win a Stanley Cup. And I'm like, okay, but who, since he took over in May of 2003, keep in mind the Sharks, the best pick they ever had was a sixth. That was his first year, Milan Mihalik, a decent pick, no, nothing wrong with that. They played almost 800 games. You're fine with that. They've only had a few other top 10 picks, and usually they've traded up to get there. They've never actually finished that bad except the Timo Meier selection, right? They traded up to get Setoguchi. They traded up to get Logan Couture. And when you look at what he's built with that team through some really big trades, and since he took over the San Jose Sharks, without having any of those top picks that I mentioned, have the most games played by drafted players in the NHL during that time. Then
that's interesting.
Yeah, they have the most games played. They have the most wins in the NHL under his tenure as a head coach. right? They have in that time, I think there's like 1,114 games played in the NHL for each team. And they have 635 wins. Only three other teams have over 600. And I know they haven't won a cup, but they have the second most playoff wins in that time span. Only Pittsburgh has more.
Yeah, and that stuff matters. I mean, whether they were – the only thing I would say is if he had structured the team in a way where they were able to get to the dance multiple times and just couldn't nudge it across the finish line, I would maybe give him a little bit more credit for, you know, his teams were so close. But how close were his teams really, other than when they went to the final? How close were good regular season teams, piled up lots of points, always competed for a division? He knows how to build a great regular season team. But really, how many of those were ever close to actually winning it all? And that might be the only knock against him, not just the fact that he hasn't won it, but that he hasn't really been that close that many times. I mean, that might be a strike against him in my mind, but they draft well. They've got good cornerstone players. His big trades generally work out well. I mean, and you can go back a ways. I mean, what was the original trade that brought Brent Burns over?
To me, his biggest and best trade was the Joe Thornton trade, right? Without question, right? Because and people forget it, because I know people were talking, they said, well, Erik Karlsson's going to be the biggest trade since Jagr. I'm like, what are you talking about? Joe Thornton got traded midway through the season. The guy won the scoring title that year. And since he's been traded, since the day he was traded, only Ovechkin and Crosby have scored more points than Joe Thornton's 973.
It was an epic deal. Oh, for sure it was. Yeah. And massively helped them. And then on top of that, he brings in Brent Burns.
Yeah, Brent Burns.
And they develop a player that's as effective as Logan Couture. Mark-Edward Vlasic. Like, they've developed some cornerstone players as well, and that's absolutely crucial. And those aren't super high draft picks that are simple. So, yeah, no, he's right up there, man. No question about it. And it just simply comes down to, you know, is there a difference between building a great regular season team and building a team that can push through in the playoffs? Is it two different skill sets? You know, do you evaluate your regular season team and think, man, there's a reason why we're not breaking through in the playoffs, and here's what it is, and here's how I'm going to fix it? And, you know, was he able to make that transition? Or is that, you know, a regular season team that's that good that often should have been able to punch their way through? I'm not sure what the answer is, but I don't think you're wrong. I think he's quietly an extremely good general manager.
Yeah, he's been great for a long time. And the other thing that blew me away when I was researching the Sharks is that the continuity in that organization is really unlike any other. Like, Roy Somner's been their AHL head coach for 20 years. Right?
That's
now,
unreal.
They've been in a few cities. So even when Wilson came in, he wasn't the guy that's like, I got to get all my guys. I want to talk to these people, see what they are, and he works with them. Their head of scouting has been there since 1996, Tim Burke, right? I've met Tim numerous times, got best, worst hair in the NHL right now. But he's the director of the Sharks since 1996. And the one thing that I think Wilson's done, I mentioned the number of all the drafted players and games played and everything, but how many times, you know, his scouts, and because the draft is kind of like their Stanley Cup. Right? Like, they spend all year, all these endless hours in the rink. And then when it comes time to it, when they really like a guy, Wilson has the wherewithal to pull off a trade to move up, whether it's four spots or, you know, three spots, eight spots. And that doesn't mean they always work out. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But that just shows your scouts that you trust them. And that goes such a long way.
Well, the other thing too, and I don't have any information, you know, on what these guys make or anything like that. But when you have people that are clearly good at what they do, and based on their drafting, they are. They're always going to get opportunities elsewhere. My guess is they take care of these guys. My guess is that they recognize how high quality they are, and they take care of them. So that, you know, if other guys have opportunities elsewhere, that's fine. But there's plenty of reason to stay because they're taken care of. And, you know, and it's important for those guys that spend those long hours out on the road, away from their families, to do that scouting. For guys that, you know, give up as much as they do, I think smart organizations take care of those people because that's kind of like the core. And again, I don't have any information that San Jose does any better at that than anyone else. My guess would be that they do.
Lastly, Artemi Panarin has told the Columbus Blue Jackets he doesn't want to have a contract negotiation this summer. And now reports are that maybe he's on the market. If you're Columbus, you know, you just traded for him in a steal, I think, of the Brandon Saad trade, without question. Why not wait it out and see? Because, A, we've never heard he's upset up until this time. And, you know, any team that acquires him, there's no guarantee he's going to sign with them.
Well, something seems odd in the way this came out. Was it the team that released that he's not wanting to talk about an extension?
No, it's Panarin's agent.
So Panarin's agent came out and said, Artemi's not ready to talk about an extension. Why would the agent do that? What would be the purpose of coming out and saying that publicly, almost signaling to everybody that, what, he might be open for a trade? Hey, teams, start calling. Maybe his player wants out of there, and that's a passive-aggressive way to go about trying to elicit some business. That seems odd. That caught my eye today when I saw that release.
And I should say that his agent says it wouldn't be appropriate for him to comment. So, but you know how that is. No comments, basically the comments.
Yeah.
But,
here's the information, everybody, that I need you all to know. No comment.
Yeah. So, well, I'm saying the report came out. It might have been Friedman or Dregs. I can't remember which one. Yeah. I'd have to go back and look to see who it was. But the agent then, when asked about that report, said, I'm not going to comment on it. So,
yeah,
then, and then Portsline went and talked to Keegan Linen and says, hey, they'd like to have him for many years, yada, yada, yada. There's plenty of time. And that's the thing. Like, I get why you want to sign guys a year in advance, but I think the NHL slowly, if I'm a smart GM, I can wait a little bit longer. Right, just to see, you know, some guys, especially later in their careers, man, all of a sudden you hit that cliff, and now the next thing you know, you've committed 7 or 8 years to a guy, and you're regretting it within a year.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be pretty open to a long-term deal with Panarin. I think he's a pretty good player, and he's going to be for quite a while here. I think more than anything, teams just they look at what happened with Tavares here. They look at what almost happened with Stamkos, what's happening with Erik Karlsson right now, what potentially happens with Oliver Ekman-Larsson. Teams know that if they have these amazing assets and they don't return value for those guys, they're allowed to walk away, the Nashville Predators and Suter, that it can really hurt the organization. So they're wanting answers sooner. Teams are wanting answers. Are you committed to being here? We're willing to put a deal on the table now. Otherwise, if you're not, there's the potential we need to try and get more for you because you're a lot more valuable now. Every day that passes by for some of these players in the last year of their deal, they become less valuable because they're not, you know, if you're willing to trade for Erik Karlsson, you want him from the start of the year when he can help you right from day one, not just, you know, near the trade deadline. So I think teams are wanting answers sooner on these guys. What are your intentions? And I think that's what happened with Ekman-Larsson in Arizona. I think the team wanted an answer. And, you know, because teams don't want to lose these assets for nothing.
Shogger, have a safe trip. We'll see you in Dallas.
Okay, look forward to it, pal.